We'll call our first case today, which is case number 73464, in the matter of the Sommer Family Living Trust. Okay, on the council we have Mr. Humphrey representing the appellants, Mr. Kiefer representing the respondent. Okay, Mr. Humphrey, did you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, can I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
You may do so. So we'll hear the timer ding at about 3 minutes left, so you know that's your cue to stop then, and we'll reserve that time for you. So you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Ed Humphrey, and I represent Marta and Brad Sommer and Brittany Sommer, the beneficiaries and heirs of Stock and Sommer in this case. Before just now, I never have been before the Nevada Supreme Court. But after today, my colleagues can say Mr. Humphrey has been before the Nevada Supreme Court. You may ask why I'm going there. I think this is a key issue in this case of what tense has been, is in NRS 164.010. Has been is in the present perfect tense. And courts have long held that verb tense is important to legislatures when drafting a statute and is crucial in interpreting that statute. A present perfect tense is defined as a grammatical combination of the present tense and perfect aspect that is used to express a past event that has present consequences. Now, that's Wikipedia. However, if you go into case law all across the country, you'll see past perfect, has been being defined as past perfect and indicating that it means something that happened in the past. For example, in Baird v. United States, a United States Supreme Court case, 423 U.S. 212, at page 216, the court observed that Congress used the present perfect tense to, quote, denote an act that has been completed. A case out of Illinois, Consiglio v. Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, the phrase has been is in the present perfect tense, which is used to refer to a past event that has present consequences. And so when you go back into NRS 164.010, which is a statute that governs jurisdiction over trusts in this state, it says jurisdiction is proper, quote, in the district court of the county in which the trustee resides, that's present tense, conducts business, that's present tense, comma, or in which the trustee has been domiciled.
The trust, right?
Yes, I'm sorry, the trust has been domiciled. Past perfect tense, meaning as of that time, the trust is domiciled in Nevada in the past. To figure out what it means to be domiciled in Nevada, you go to 164.045. Because 164.010, subsection 4, tells you to. It says, for purposes of this section, a trust is domiciled in this state if there's a clear and sufficient nexus between the trust in this state pursuant to subsection 4 of 164.045. This is the statute that was in effect when this petition was filed. When you go to 164.045, subsection 4, it lists different things. When a trust is domiciled in Nevada, when that occurs. The first, if the trust owns an interest in real property located in the state. Again, the first part of the statute, Tory Test 164.010, which keys on everything else, is has been domiciled. If you read 164.045, subsection 4, to require property to be owned at the time the petition is filed, for example.
But sir, I'm sorry, doesn't 045 give the court discretion? And if so, how can we say the court abused its discretion in this case?
I think that, to some extent, maybe that's correct, but I think that discretion has to be contained by ascertainable standards, not just any type of discretion. There is no standards outlaid here by the commissioner in issuing this decision. So I think if you're saying, our first argument is the legislature amended the statute in 2018 and said these were just basically form amendments and not substantive amendments. And I think it makes it clear here that the trustee or the court shall exercise the jurisdiction. But even in a discretionary jurisdictional test, you usually have to key that to some sort of discretion. So, for example, the court may have subject matter jurisdiction or personal jurisdiction over all parties in a general civil action, but for certain reasons and accepted doctrines, that jurisdiction is not exercised. Form nonconvenience is the one that comes to mind. In order to assess form nonconvenience, this court has set forth specific factors.
Well, did you argue to Judge Hardy at any time that regardless of the provisions in Chapter 164, that there was personal jurisdiction based on the fact that Mrs. Summer owned real estate in Sparks and Washoe County, and therefore that there would be a basis for jurisdiction just by the fact that she lived in Nevada? Was that argument made?
Yes, we argued before both the commissioner and Judge Hardy on review of the commissioner's decision that there was in personam jurisdiction over Mr. Henry. And so outside of Chapter 164. And so it's our position that another thing that's interesting, and that I think, Your Honor, Justice Gibbons brings up a good point, because our petition here was brought under multiple subsections of Chapter 164, including 164.033. And so when you look at 164.033, that statute allows you to bring a petition to recover property or if the trust has interest in a res, or and we say that we had an interest in property that was in Nevada. That statute in particular is not keyed to 164.010. And so a lot of the other petition statutes in Chapter 164 specifically say if a petition is granted under 164.010, you can also consider a petition under this subsection. 164.015 is an example. 164.030 for a petition for instructions also keyed to 164.010. But 164.033 is not. And so, and our petition contained a claim for 164.033.
Mr. Humphrey, I wondered if you could address what seemed to be the fundamental basis of the commissioner's recommendation, and it appears also to have been the basis for Judge Hardy's exercise of discretion to decline jurisdiction. And that focuses on the situs provisions in Section 8, and particularly the changing of the trust situs requirements. Why shouldn't this court, in assessing abuse of discretion at least, afford that decision discretion?
Well, I think there's probably two elements, Justice Hardesty, on answering that question. The first is, did the court apply the correct law? And I think that's not an abuse of discretion standard. That's de novo by this court. And our position is that in applying 164.010 and 045, the commissioner read out domicile out of that statute, essentially defining domicile as summarizing what it meant to conduct business or to reside there. And it didn't even mention domicile in the ruling, and in fact said, if the court addresses the first two, conducts business or resides, you don't even have to get to domicile. We say that's incorrect. And I think that to the second part of your question, or my answer to your question, Justice Hardesty, is I think you're looking at 164.045 subsection 3 in the old statute, which discretion said the court cannot exercise jurisdiction unless one of these factors is present. One of them is the trust expressly has a situs provision in it. We do not believe this trust expressly has a situs provision. It talks about changing situs, but nowhere in the trust at all does it say California is the situs of this trust. It says that beneficiaries unanimously can decide to change the situs from wherever that may be, but I think situs is a fluid concept. If the trust doesn't have a situs provision in it that says this, the situs of this trust is California, then it matters where the trust is being administered. If you look at the restatement, 167 conflicts, second, it talks about that generally the situs of a trust, if it doesn't expressly say that it's governed or the situs is California, it matters where it's being administered at the time. And here we know that Orlean was living in Nevada for a decade before she died. Both trusts are being administered here by her. She's withdrawing funds from both of them. She's purchasing property. And so I think situs, if it's not expressed, if the trust doesn't say this trust's situs is California, then you look at where is it being administered.
And so you have a concept here, and that's what makes this case interesting to me, at least. When the case begins, I don't think there's any question that the situs of the trust is located in California. So what you're suggesting is that the court recognize a concept that the situs can change to another state, even though there's been no written declaration of the change of the situs from whence it originally commenced. On that point, is there any authority that shows that the court can disregard a provision in the trust that specifically declares how one changes situs?
Well, I think that if you're looking at the actual text of the situs statute, you have to pay close attention to the actual text. Mm-hmm. Does the situs provision say the only way to change situs is by having something in writing, or does it say the beneficiaries can all get together and then change situs? So I think you have to look at the text to see, is this the only way that we can do it? I don't think that's the case. I think that if you move under general concepts of situs of a trust and administer it in another state, that becomes a situs.
And then one additional question on the statute, the older version of the statute. My understanding is that Arlene used the proceeds from the sale of the California residence to purchase the Sparks residence, and in doing so took title to the Sparks residence in her own name. Is there any evidence in the record that there was any real property that was a part of the trust raise at the time you filed your petition?
I think that no, not titled specifically in the name, but I don't think that it changed the character of being trust property if it went from just a transmutation of title. I think doesn't do that, and I think 164.033 touches on that. The first subsection of 164.033 talks about title is only one way to get there, and so I take a look at that statute.
Was that a prayer in your petition that you were seeking to establish trust ownership, I guess, of the Sparks property?
Yes, it was. There was constructive trust action as well. And we took the position there's also civil claims pled in there. And under the sort of one cause rule, we had a little bit of difficulty determining should this be a civil case, should it be a petition. I think that should be clarified by the court on exactly how to bring these type of dual actions that are asking for some trust petition aspects and civil claims.
If this court were to reject your argument that the new statute applies and that this should be governed by the language of the old statute, do you think the disposition in this case should be the subject of an opinion and would have value to the probate and trust practitioners in the state?
Yes, I do, because the has-been aspect of the statute is in both the current version and the old version. And so I think clarifying that has been domiciled means domiciled yesterday. I have been to Disneyland. That needs to be clarified, and that applies to both.
Okay, thank you very much, Council.
Good morning, if it pleases the court. Dan Kiefer here on behalf of Respondent John Hembry, the trustee. I think we've kind of hit the nail on the head. We've had some questions about the applicable standard of review. And I think that needs to be the start of how we look at this case. That's the paradigm we need to look through. This is an abuse of discretion. And it's an abuse of discretion case because you have a permissive statute that allows the court to look at whether or not there's a clear and sufficient nexus, and then it may assume jurisdiction. Now, there's a lot of talk about the old and the new statute, but for purposes of this case, there's only one statute. It's the statute that was in existence on the date the petition was filed. And so it's important, if you look at 164.0453, that's where this permissive statute comes in. It says, if the district court determines that there is a clear and sufficient nexus between a trust and this state, the court may assume jurisdiction during a proceeding conducted pursuant to NRS 164.010 unless, and then it gives the list. And it shows, down below it talks about A is whether or not there's another court that's taken jurisdiction. B and C are very relevant here. So even if the court had elected to exercise jurisdiction, it still couldn't do so if B and C applied. And B says, the trust instrument expressly provides that the situs of the trust is outside of this state, or that a court of jurisdiction other than this state has jurisdiction over the trust. And I apologize, I read fast when I'm looking at my notes. Well, that's critical because we've already established, I don't think anyone disputes that the original situs of this trust was California.
Well, but the trust instrument did not declare the situs to be California, and that's the wording of the statute, which is a little different from what the law would deem to be the situs absent a declaration. I mean, I think there's a difference there, and I think that's the point that your opponent is making.
Certainly, and I acknowledge that point, but I would counter with this, Your Honor. I think the answer is yes and no, because you have a provision that allows you to change the situs via writing. You can't change a situs that didn't exist. There has to be an established
situs. I'm not saying
situs.
It doesn't exist, but I'm saying it's not declared in the trust instrument. Wouldn't you agree that the trust instrument does not declare the situs?
No, I would say that the situs is clear from the document that it's California.
Is there an express provision?
Sorry. Yeah. But, excuse me.
I would say that if you read the situs change in conjunction with the fact, all of the factors, if you look at the document as a whole, just like a contract, then there is an express provision because it's drafted under California law by California attorneys by settlers who lived in California.
I understand California that land. California law would apply, but wouldn't you agree with me that this trust instrument does not declare California to be the situs?
Correct. There is no provision that says California is the situs. That is correct.
Thank you.
But if you go down to C, it resolves that problem anyways. Because if you go down, it says a person has designated for the trust a situs or jurisdiction other than this state if such person made the designation at a time during which he or she held the power to make such a designation under the express terms of the trust instrument. That's Mr. Hembry. He became the successor trustee and issued the notice of irrevocability and consented to jurisdiction in California, declaring the situs to be California. So the key here is either you need to look at the settlor's intent, and you need to look at what the settlors intended, and then you need to look at responsible parties who had the ability to make the change. And C would still prohibit it. But again, all of this is assuming that the court wanted to take jurisdiction. Because under this statute, the court could look at this, and the whole reason for having this way laid out is the court's going to do an analysis of the domicile situs, and it's going to make a determination. Should this really be here? Because you have to keep in mind, NRS 164.010 is an in-rem jurisdiction for the entire trust. You're not just saying, hey, I want to adjudicate this one little issue. You're saying this is the home jurisdiction for this trust. This is the one place where everyone should have to come to deal with administration, distribution, breach of fiduciary duty, all of those issues. And so what they looked at, what the judge looked at, and went through these steps, the judge and the commissioner, they looked at all the different relevant points relating to California. And in fact, during the underlying hearing, Judge Hardy asked a very poignant question to Mr. Humphrey, and he said, He said, you know, I don't understand. He said, as I understand it, the only connection to this trust has to Nevada at the moment is you, Mr. Humphrey. Is that correct? Is there anything else besides you? Because, again, you have to remember.
Would you agree that at the time of Arlene's death, the trust had acquired a situs in Nevada?
No, I do not, Your Honor. Okay. Situs needs to be intentional. You can't fall into a situs.
Okay.
I believe that it needs to be an intentional choice like a domicile. And her intent was not expressed that Nevada be the situs.
And because it seems to me you're opening up, I understand the general jurisdictional analysis, but there seems to me you're kind of inviting abuse if you say a successor trustee can escape jurisdiction by sort of a post hoc declaration after a trust has been mismanaged and say, well, we're going to say the trust is in Wisconsin, you can't go there.
I think that that's an excellent point, and I think that that's where we have to understand the petitions for a trust in a probate context asking to take jurisdiction of the whole trust are different than a civil complaint. There is absolutely nothing that stops the complaining beneficiaries from filing a civil complaint in Nevada naming the trust, the successor trustee, and the former trustee as defendants. That's not what they did. They asked the court instead to take jurisdiction of the whole trust. So the analysis is different. If they were to file the complaint and name them as defendants, then the analysis would have been based on specific personal jurisdiction. And it wouldn't be based on this statute. But the statute is looking at the trust as a whole and saying, is this home base? I liken it to, it's not an exact analogy, but I liken it to general personal jurisdiction and specific personal jurisdiction for an individual. My general personal jurisdiction, as I'm sure you know, would be Nevada. I live here. I reside here. You can sue me for any purpose here. But that doesn't mean that I'm not subject to specific personal jurisdiction in any state I've visited or done things in. And so I think that that's, although it may appear that way, you have to remember that it is the complaining beneficiaries who elected this form and the method into the form. They elected to come in under NRS 164.010 instead of filing a civil complaint.
Mr. Kiefer, Mr. Kiefer, when Arlene made the third and final amendments to the trust and executed a deed of the Nevada property to the Arlene subtrust, were there any other assets in the subtrust remaining in Nevada?
In California.
Or stated a different way, no, excuse me, let me rephrase that. Were there any other assets, real or personal, remaining in Nevada?
Well, I guess
of,
I'm a bit...
Of Arlene.
Yes, and I guess I'm a bit confused because Arlene never sold the Nevada property. That was sold by Mr. Hembree after the fact. So do you mean when she sold the house in California?
My understanding is she signed a quitclaim deed conveying the property in Nevada to the Arlene subtrust.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. It had previously been titled in her own name.
Understood.
Signed a quitclaim deed placing it in the subtrust before she died. And then, as you indicated, after she passed, the successor trustee sold it. My question is different. Did Arlene have any personal property, bank accounts, other assets in Nevada when she passed?
Yeah, I believe she had bank accounts at national institutions.
And were those subject to a probate?
They were not, because I believe that they were titled in the name of the trust.
Okay. So all assets?
I believe that is correct.
Were titled in the name of the trust?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
And that's the account where the proceeds from the sale of the California house were placed?
I believe it's one of the accounts.
Until they were used?
I believe that's correct. I think there were multiple accounts, but yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And I think, you know, I want to go back also to the intent question regarding the situs and the domicile and whether or not situs changes and whether or not situs was in Nevada. I think it's clear from the case law that throughout the country that when you want to change situs, there has to be an intent. And one of the things we have to remember is that Arlene, she continued to travel back to Sacramento for the three separate amendments to meet with her California attorneys, to have them draft the amendments for the trust because she understood that California was, in fact, the situs and home base of this trust. And that's the important critical issue because I'm not standing here today saying that there aren't actions that could have been taken by individuals, whether Mr. Hembree or Arlene or the trust, that would subject the trust or those two individuals to specific personal jurisdiction in Nevada. But that's not the question. The question is where does this trust, where does it sit, and where is the appropriate jurisdiction in rem for the entire trust? And so that's where I think we get confused because what Mr. Hembree is essentially arguing is, well, they should have looked at the specific instances of each of the individual things that occurred, whether what Mr. Hembree did, what Arlene did. That's not how the statute's structured. And it's intentional because the legislature understood that you're asking for something different. When you come in and you file a petition under NRS 164010, NRS 164045, you're asking the court to make a determination about the trust. You're not asking the court to look at the individuals or the individual acts. You're asking the court to look at the totality of the acts.
But the test for the clear and sufficient nexus isn't about whether the situs was changed. It's these other factors that there doesn't seem to be findings on those factors.
Well, it does relate to situs and domicile are related in the sense that if you go to 164.0453, that's where the limitations kick in about if the situs has been elected by the settlor or someone with authority after the settlor dies.
Under sub 3C, is that where you are?
Yes, C and B.
I think we just acknowledged that there is no express provision.
Correct.
So I think we're done with B.
Well, again, I don't think that these can be read in a strict sense as if, okay, well, you know, just look at this, and if B's not there, you can still go to C.
Yeah.
And you go to C, and a person has acknowledged that the situs is California, right? And again, to the justice's question about kind of evading jurisdiction, well, that again goes back to whether or not, again, we're not talking about Mr. Hembree personally. We're not talking about whether or not he is subject to lawsuit in Nevada or whether or not Arlene and her estate, now that she's deceased, is subject to lawsuit in Nevada. We're talking about whether or not the trust is subject to jurisdiction and control in Nevada. And so it's an entirely different question. And so the difficult issue here is that we've kind of switched our paradigm halfway through the case. Mr. Hembree and his clients came in and they asked for specific relief in the petition. But then, once they realized that they weren't going to get the court to take jurisdiction of the whole trust, then they wanted to have their separate claims analyzed individually. But that's not what they asked for because the statute says specifically that if the court assumes jurisdiction, then it can review the other petitions related to the case, whether it be under NRS 153031, NRS 164015. But again, there was nothing that stopped Mr. Hembree and his clients from filing a separate civil action, naming the trust and naming Mr. Hembree as defendants. That was certainly something they could do. But for whatever reason, they didn't elect to do that.
Can you clarify, I believe in the comments brief, I saw something about two beneficiaries being from Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
But then in your answering brief, you had stated, I want to make sure that this was presented as well to the probate commissioner and the district court judge, that the two Nevada residents had already consented to the jurisdiction of the California probate court.
Correct.
Did I not get that right?
No, that's correct.
So they, coming into this action, despite being from Nevada, had already consented to California's probate court.
Correct. And that's because the complaining beneficiaries, none of them are from Nevada. It's other beneficiaries who have not raised issues in the case who are from Nevada, and they have, in fact, consented to jurisdiction in California.
Okay. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Where, is that in the record? Do you have that record site at all?
Yes. So it's in the record. I believe it's in the second volume of the appendix. I believe that the consents are dated of October of 2016 or 2017. I apologize, Your Honor. I don't have the appendix table of contents in front of me. But again, just in conclusion, Your Honors, we have to go back to the abuse of discretion standard. We have to go back and we have to say, did in reviewing the master's report, did Judge Hardy, did he make, is the abuse palpable? Did he disregard clear legal principles? And he did not. It's a very reasoned process that was gone through, not only with the commissioner, but with the judge, to look at this statute as a whole and to analyze the jurisdictional question that the complaining beneficiaries pose. They're the ones that chose this method to bring this case. I see that my time is up, Your Honor, unless there's any other questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. Mr. Humphrey, we'll give you an even minute here if you can, and you wrap up.
All right, Justice Kadish, I wanted to touch on 164.045.3c. You had mentioned that 3b was done. 3c says that the court, it carves out an exception from jurisdiction if a person has designated for the trust a situs or jurisdiction other than this state. Opposing counsel has referenced certain notices sent to the beneficiaries. One of them, for example, is that Joint Appendix 174. Nowhere in here does it mention the word situs. Nowhere does it mention the word jurisdiction.
Well, that was going to be one of the additional questions I had for you. Is there anything in the Third or Fourth Amendments in which Anita declares California as a situs?
No, Your Honor, there is not.
Is there any? So there's no writing in the trust or in the amendments that declares California to be the original situs, as would be required by subsection B, nor is there any express written provision in the amendments to the trust that would declare California to be the situs under subsection C. Is that your argument?
That is correct. Even more important than that, the trust became irrevocable upon Arlene's death, so you couldn't even change it at that point.
So, may I follow up?
Sure.
My understanding from your friend across the aisle is that Hambrick tried to change the situs, but you're saying that would be utterly ineffectual because
he is pointing to a notice that he sent to the beneficiary saying you have 90 days if you don't think this trust should go irrevocable. It's an irrevocability notice.
Uh-huh.
Nowhere in that notice does it mention the word situs or jurisdiction. I'm saying that this document doesn't qualify under 3C, and it couldn't have as a matter of law.
And that Hembree did not ever send anything that purported to change the situs? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you. Other than what you just read.
Other than that, correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both for your excellent arguments and briefs and bringing this issue to us to consider, and we'll take this case under submission.